Hi, welcome to the Bounded Enthusiasm podcast. I'm Jonathan Liu, your host, and with me today is Jenny Holm, the author of The 14th Goldfish, as well as the Baby Mouse series and the Squish comic book series and several other books for kids. So thank you for being on the show, Jenny.
Ah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
All right, tell me a little bit about The 14th Goldfish. What is it about?
So The 14th Goldfish is really about a girl named Ellie. She's 11 years old, so she's just starting middle school, and that's always a kind of a crazy time in kids' lives. She's home after school one day, and her babysitter tells her that her mom has called and that she's going to be late because her grandfather is in trouble with the police, and she has to go find out what's going on. And Ellie's kind of confused about all this. And then when her mother comes home later that night, she brings home with her this teenager. And her mother's a drama teacher, and she's always kind of has stray, you know, theater geeks hanging out with her. And she thinks it's maybe one of the kids from the theater. And this boy immediately starts to interrogate her and ask her, you know, are you on the honor roll? And all these very kind of adult questions. And she looks at him, and he seems familiar, but she can't quite figure out where she's met him before. And then she sees his hand, and on his hand is a ring that she recognizes as belonging to her grandfather. And then she realizes that this kid is her grandfather. Her grandfather is a scientist, and he's found a cure to reverse aging. And he got busted trying to break into his own lab, and her mom, his daughter, had to bail him out. So that's where the book starts.
I have read it. I read it out loud to my two daughters, and we thoroughly enjoyed it.
Nice.
In the book, there's the premise that, you know, Melvin has found this anti-aging cure, and that's kind of what kicks it off.
Right.
But there's a lot of real science in there. I mean, Melvin is talking to Ellie about Jonas Salk, and he's talking about Oppenheimer, and I love the fact that there is this real science woven into the story.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do that?
So this book was really inspired by my father, actually. So he's dead, but he was a doctor. He was a pediatrician, and he was a very enthusiastic scientist, you might say. You know, when we were growing up, he used to keep petri dishes with blood agar in our refrigerator to culture bacteria, like next to the cottage cheese. We thought all kids' parents did this until we grew up and realized it was kind of strange. But he was very enthusiastic about science, and he was a little bit of an older generation. He was like a depression baby. And so he came of age in medicine during this kind of this golden age in medicine with sort of the first round of really incredible antibiotics and how they all, you know, kind of changed the world. And he was around, like he watched the whole Salk thing happened, saw the polio epidemic happen and saw the cure. So he lived through it. And so we just grew up talking about science, and it was just part of our life. And my mom is a nurse too. So a doctor and a nurse at dinner. I mean, let's talk about germs, you know, it was just normal.
Well, and then speaking of Salk, today is Salk's 100th birthday.
Happy birthday, Jonas Salk.
So, I saw that the Google Doodle today
is a
Jonas Salk doodle. So that's pretty cool. It was good timing. And I think it's fun to be able to talk to my kids about, you know, who these people were and who Oppenheimer was. And we actually had a conversation, you know, last night at dinner about Oppenheimer and about the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that you get into in your book is that Ellie at first is very excited to learn about, you know, Salk. She learns about Oppenheimer, and it's not until later that she starts thinking about the negative or unintended consequences that can also be associated with science.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's part of just growing up with my dad a little bit and that generation. Like, Salk and Oppenheimer were just such rock star scientists. Like, we don't have any sense today, I think, of what rock stars they were in the day and how they really changed things. And my dad, you know, he joined up during World War II. So that was a war that was, you know, sort of effectively ended by a scientist, by a scientific discovery, the atomic bomb. And then he was also a pediatrician. And so he was involved with the war on polio, which was a terrible disease that really affected children specifically. So it was really within his field. But if you look at the long-term consequences of each of these amazing scientific discoveries, it's vastly different what the legacies are.
Yes. You know, we're talking about this idea that, yes, the atomic bomb ended the war, but it also still has these repercussions that are ongoing today.
Right. And it's only with the hindsight of time going by that we see what the repercussions are. So,
yeah.
And I think even now, like, this is something that scientists talk about all the time. Like, say, even now, I kind of jokingly say, like, oh, it's just a good thing my dad is dead and he's not seeing MRSA, because, like, MRSA with antibiotics, there's this resistant. So we've kind of are creating these new strains of virulent bacteria because of our science. So it's constantly a questioning thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about vaccines and everyone's concerned now about Ebola.
Right. I know.
But there are also these other diseases that we have vaccines for. And there, and now in the United States, we have people who say, well, you know, I'm not going to vaccinate my kids because those vaccines have worked so well that those diseases are no longer endemic to the United States.
Yeah. And it's terrifying. And I'm, you know, I'm very pro-vaccination. I think we don't remember our history well enough. And I know, like, within my family, one of the biggest things was when, like, I, like, finally moved out of the house. My dad very proudly gave me my vaccination card. Like, that was, like, a big deal because, you know, within his lifetime, children died from whooping cough and polio. So these are all preventable things now.
Yeah.
So get your shots.
Yeah, we've got our shots.
Get your flu shot.
Yep. And I wanted to switch over to the other big part of this book is kind of Ellie's coming of age. I mean, she's entering middle school and she has this kind of drifting away from Brianna, who used to be her best friend in elementary school.
Yeah.
And starting to make new friends based on her interests. And so I wanted to find out, first of all, which came first when you were writing this book? Was there, you know, you really wanted to write about science, or did you have this idea for a middle school setting that you really wanted to tackle?
I think actually the thing that came first was I really wanted to explore the family dynamic of Ellie and her grandfather and her mother, like how that dynamic would potentially change if something like this was discovered. If, you know, if we found a way to reverse aging, how would just the nuclear family dynamic change? And it's changing already with people living longer. And how would it affect kids?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously middle school is such a big time of change. And I hated middle school. And I found it a very bewildering time. It was, you went from knowing everybody and having friends and being very confident about yourself in fifth grade. And then you are thrown into this pond with all these new kids and you don't know your way. And I think I've also observed with my own children and watching them go through school now is that it seems by middle school now, kids are starting to get their act together a little bit more than I remember getting my act together. You know, like they seem to have more defined interests, like they're on travel soccer team or they're very involved in something. And actually within my own family, like my son isn't really in any of those now. So he just started sixth grade. So he's trying to navigate the waters. You know, he's not a real athlete. He's never played a lot of sports. He likes computers. He likes programming, but there's not like a big after school club for let's go do some programming.
Right.
You know, it's not that kind of a rah-rah sport. So it's a hard time in a kid's life, I think. And I don't think that it's malicious or anything sometimes when just kids drift apart and reform groups. That's just sort of natural in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like the way that was handled in the book. It didn't feel like Brianna was intentionally saying, you know, I'm going to go and make some new friends because I don't like you anymore. But that it was this natural sort of drifting apart and that that there wasn't this antagonism there.
Yeah. And I've seen just with friends, kids, when they get excited about something that they are involved in, like they're excited about volleyball, it just becomes this new affection in their life and they're traveling every weekend and it's novel and so they do drift away from maybe their old pack of friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My own daughter had, she just started middle school this year. And her school, again, I mean, she has a few classmates who ended up in the same middle school, but they actually got scattered all over because of the elementary school they went to. A lot of people came from other places to come to this school.
Right.
And then they went all over the place for middle school. So it's been, you know, kind of hard transition feeling like, oh, you know, everybody that I knew in elementary school is going away.
Yeah.
In a way that I didn't experience that myself. You know, when I went to junior high, we added a lot more kids.
Yep.
But most of the kids from my elementary school went to the same junior high. And so you still had, you know, your kind of base group of friends. Whereas her class, it really felt like at the end of fifth grade that this was sort of the end of an era.
Yes, you know? Totally. It was like, oh, yeah. It's hard though.
Yeah. So I know you've written a lot of books, both prose and the comic books that you do with your brother Matt.
Yep.
But you also have two kids. So
yes.
How do you I need to remind you that in case you forgot. How do you juggle your writing and your parenting?
Not very well sometimes. The best, I love when I do school visits and kids are like, "So what are your hobbies?" I'm like, "My hobbies? I have two kids."
Right.
Keeping them alive is like my goal. It's a little tricky. You know, now they're both in, my daughter now is in a longer school day. So they're in school until almost 3. So this is the first year that I have a solid block of time between, you know, 9 and 3 to really work. I think where it gets hard is I travel a fair amount and mm-hmm. go to book festivals and fun stuff, go on school visits and just trying to cobble together care for when I'm on the road. But yeah, it's tricky. And I think what's tricky is if, like, you know, when you work at home, it's like you can get sucked into all the home stuff too.
Right.
As procrastination. Like, oh, maybe I should fold some laundry. No, you should be writing is what you should be doing. You know? So you become like the default taking care of everything around the house person.
Right, right. I was just reading a book about National Novel Writing Month, you know, written by Chris Beatty. And he said that the thing about doing this in a month is that you give yourself that permission to say, I'm going to ignore that for it's
yes.
just 1 month, you know, but I'm going to ignore these things that are not critical and make myself write.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it is hard to do when you work from home, when you write from home and you've got kid responsibilities.
Yeah. And it's just, and I have gotten good at saying, you know, you need to go play with yourself. Goodbye. Like, go. Like, I shut my door to the bedroom and try to write and get stuff done. So trying to train them up to knock on the door a little bit better. It's harder now because we just moved recently. So 2 houses ago, I had an office that was an office. And now I'm in the bedroom, which is like everybody free roams in here looking for things and,
yeah.
you know, cords and whatever. But yeah, I think what else is hard is that I'm not a night person. So I've never been able to, like, you know, put the kids down and then stay up all night and write. I'm too tired by then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely changed since having kids.
Yeah.
That whole second half of the day is useless.
Right. I actually tend to do that. I put my kids to bed and I stay up late and write. The problem is I still have to get up in the mornings when they get up.
Yes.
So, you know, my office, as you can see, is here in the dining room. So
yes.
That's the most public space of the house. So
we lead very glamorous lives.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I always have this image of like what a real writer has, like an office with a beautiful chair and pile of laundry in the background. So no, it's been tricky. It's been hard. So, I think what's hard is you really have to keep yourself on a schedule and sometimes say, okay, well, I can't do that because I'm going to miss this deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be a tough boss on yourself.
Yeah. Do your kids help you at all in your writing? I mean, do you use them as test readers?
I do. Well, Will had read an earlier version of The 14th Goldfish and a much earlier version, and I completely rewrote it. So that was kind of funny because I said, now you need to read it again. He's like, I've already read it. I read it. I said, I completely rewrote it. It's totally different. He likes to design the covers, he says. So he'll give me a drawing, and then he expects me to send it into Random House in New York as art direction. But not too much. Usually he uses books to, like, get girls, so he'll ask for like a bunch of copies of Baby Mouse because he's crushing on somebody. So
when you write, do you use your kids as a target audience for, you know, the level, like your son started middle school and you have a book that's about
yeah.
a girl starting middle school, you know, do you try to write things that you think would speak to your own kids?
Yeah, you know what? It's sad to say that I don't. Because when I started writing it 4 years ago, so I actually started
okay.
before. And so I was kind of observing a lot of other middle schoolers at the time, but not so much actually. But mm-hmm. I think what I have done a little bit in response to being around kids all the time is I write a little shorter. I try to make it a little shorter, a little cleaner. Like my earlier novels were much longer.
Uh-huh.
And I try to make things a little tighter, a little cleaner, mostly because I see there's just a wide range of readers in sort of the 4th to 6th grade space. And I would love it if my books are accessible to the lower readers as well as the guys who are
right.
ripping through the 600 pages of Harry Potter, you know?
Right. Yeah. So. Without any spoilers,
That's okay.
for my listeners, the book does end with a little kind of a tweak.
Yep.
Are there plans for another one, or are you going to end it here?
You know, right now there's no. It's standalone.
It's a standalone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We just thought that would be a fun little tease at the end.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Leaving it open for more possibilities.
Nice. Exactly.
You know what? Let's talk about Baby Mouse.
Let's
talk about Baby Mouse and Squish. Those are, you know, two comic books that you write and your brother illustrates, your brother
Correct.
Matthew.
Yeah.
How did you get started on those?
So that was sort of like the Baby Mouse and Squish series were really a result of our childhood. So I'm one of five kids and I'm the only girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was growing up back in the old days, the 70s, you know, I read all the comics that my brothers were reading. We had a ton of comics in the house. And in fact, our dad was a huge comic strip and comic book fan. We had the bound volumes of Prince Valiant and Flash Gordon in our house. So they really pushed, they like loved comics. So I read what the boys were reading, and there was Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and Plastic Man, but there weren't a lot of ladies, generally speaking, in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're going to say, but there was Wonder Woman, right? But I just never identified with Wonder Woman. And I think it had to do with the fact that I was a normal kid, like a normal 7-year-old, 8-year-old girl, and I wore clothes. And Wonder Woman runs around in her underwear, and I just couldn't ever get past that. And I wanted a character that I could relate to the way I saw, like, my teenage brothers relating to Spider-Man, you
right.
know?
Spider-Man, like, who's a kid who has problems. And
he's like a teenage
yeah.
boy, you know? Like, it's just very, a very accessible thing. And so I would whine about it. And my brother Matt is a really talented cartoonist. And so, you know, many years later, we started working on Baby Mouse, and then Squish grew out of Baby Mouse. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we deliberately created it so that girls would have a heroine that they could identify with.
Mm-hmm.
She joins the swim team, in case you're wondering.
Wet mice, right?
Yes. Actually, so funny about asking about influence. This book is actually inspired directly by my niece, who's on the swim team. So mm-hmm. I've been hearing all of her travails of being on a swim team. So this book is actually sort of directly based on Fiona. So.
Oh, very fun.
Yeah.
All right. And you're up to, there's a dozen of those.
Yeah, there's number 18 just came out, and mm-hmm. we're actually, I'm writing number 20 right now, and the sixth Squish book just came out,
mm-hmm.
so it's just like, crack the whip on my brother, draw, guys, poor guy's hand's gonna fall off one of these days.
Yeah, I have gotten to meet him at Wordstock a couple years ago,
yeah.
so that's been fun.
Portland is a comic town, man.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun place for comic books, and there are people I meet and don't realize it. Oh, right, this is a person that writes this comic book.
Yeah, for sure. You've Dark Horse there, so
yes.
you've got a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about the time we have for today. So thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So once again, The 14th Goldfish is an excellent book for middle grade readers. Has a lot of science in it and a lot of middle school drama. And that's Jenny Holm. And we can find you on Twitter at Jenny Holm.
Mm-hmm.
That's with an I, not a Y.
Exactly.
And then do you have a website also?
JenniferHolm.com.
JenniferHolm.com. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enjoyed having you. Thanks for listening to Bounded Enthusiasm. You can find other episodes at geekdad.com and also a review of The 14th Goldfish.